Welcome to EM Radio. I'm Tamara Winfrey-Harris, here with producer Anthony Scott. This Saturday, the Idle Jorg will host Navajo Day, an exploration and celebration of Navajo culture. Now, this day is too packed with activities for me to mention everything that's going on, but highlights include: we have all day a Mark Winter Navajo rug trunk show, including free appraisals of Navajo weavings, no appointment necessary. We have Navajo weaving, sheep shearing, and wool dyeing with artist in residence, Tana Bonatani. We have all day long hands-on family activities. You can experience the art of drum making with Tony Shoah, learn to make traditional Navajo fry bread, watch Navajo silversmith Enoch Carson at work. You can see the wonderful film Miss Navajo, which is a PBS independent lens documentary, hear great traditional stories, and tour Navajo objects in our galleries, and stop at our Southwest cart. You're going to want to visit www.idlejorg.org to learn more, because really, there is so much more. The day is going to be an extraordinary opportunity to experience Navajo culture. And today, I'm fortunate to be able to bring a little bit of that culture to you. I'm joined by Tana Bonatani, who is Navajo. She's a weaver, and she's currently an artist in residence at the museum. Jody Rust is a case manager at the American Indian Center here in Indianapolis. And Tony Shoah, who is also Navajo, is a drum maker and powwow drummer. Welcome, everyone. I'd like to start by asking what you think Navajo means to the average person in the United States right now.
Navajo, sometimes to me, what it means is when I first look at people will say, hey, do you own those trucks, you know, that goes, that travel across nation, because it always says Navajo on it. Does Navajo Nation people own that, or something like, oh no, we don't own trucks, you know. They also think that we do everything in silvers and turquoise, and, you know, and sheep. Even other Indians, like my friend Lakota person, he thinks that we're just deal with sheep. And when they have that similarity, I think we're passive too as well, you know. They don't think we're warrior like either, because of the sheep idea too. So, but we don't, we are warriors too.
I think what Navajo is said, maybe the greater community might think of code talkers, or they might think of weaving and sheep, and just like Tony mentioned, silversmith.
Yeah, I think I would agree, because a lot of people, when I say that my children are Navajo or Diné, which means the people, they'll say, you know, oh, you know, they'll talk about the jewelry, or they'll talk about the rugs, and so they have a limited understanding of the culture. Their understanding of the culture is only based in the artistry, which is art, but for, you know, my children, their dad's family, it's a way of living. I mean, they don't do it to display their stuff at a museum. They do it so they can pay their bills the next month. So,
and I would imagine there are quite a few people who don't even have that much of an understanding. I mean, I think there's a misconception about a lot of Native American culture that it's extinct. And actually, Tony, you shared a good story the last time I met you about an experience with someone who was surprised to hear that you were Navajo.
Yes, and the story goes, I was in Los Angeles taking a bus, and there was a young black lady there, and she had an arm full of grocery bags and her young kid and a stroller and diaper bag. So she had a lot of items on her and bags, and she dropped something. So I went over there and picked it up for her and went back to my spot on near the bus area, and she looked at me differently. Then, of course, I noticed she was still looking at me differently, so I went over there and I asked her, what's up? And she says, what are you? Because in Los Angeles, we have a lot of different cultures that look maybe native, like the Chinese or the Japanese or the Mexicans and so forth. And but she knew I wasn't them, because there's a lot of the Asian population around, or Mexicans there. So I told her, looking at her real quickly, I said, should I say I'm Diné? No, I don't think she would get that. Should I say I'm Navajo? No, I don't think she'll get that either. I just said, I'm Indian. She said, oh, okay. So I went back to my spot. And then she was still looking at me weird. And so I said, okay, what's going on? I went back over there and I asked her. And she looked at me again and she told me. And this, she told me, didn't Hollywood make up the Indians for the movies? So what she thought was, she thought that Hollywood made up a race of nation for the movies of Indians. And that's, and she didn't think that Indians ever existed.
See, I have a story like that. Mm-hmm. My daughters, when we first moved back in January of 07, mm-hmm. we moved back from Arizona, and they went to a birthday party. And the ladies that lived next door to where we were staying, they were she was, I think, Mexican. And mm-hmm. so my daughter went over there to the birthday, both of them went to the birthday party, and one of the girls there said, you know, what are you? And Mercedes, my oldest, she says, oh, I'm Navajo Indian. And and the girl says, well, you can't be Indian. And Mercedes said, well, why not? And the girl said, because the Indians are extinct. I know, because I learned in school. So, I mean, you know, here, a lot of the education, a lot of mm-hmm. what's taught about American Indians in general stops after the, or right before the Indian Removal Act in the mid-1800s. So,
Tony and Tanaba, both of you are artists. So how do you think being Navajo informs what you do?
Well, as a weaver, I feel that my work speaks to an audience in terms of science, in terms of the different disciplines, because the work I do as a weaver, I collect plants, and I use these plants, and I extract the dyes from them. And when I spin wool using our Navajo lap spindle, I'm also practicing the laws of physics, the laws of thermodynamics, because of the revolution of spins per minute to obtain a strand of wool. Sometimes, and I'm doing this pretty much intuitively, instinctively, and this is what our ancestors did. And as a weaver, I feel like I've reacquainted with these disciplines, and I'm introducing to our students at home in Navajo country, and also away from Navajo country, that our people were in tune with these sciences, and that's how we're able to be here today in 2008.
So where do you get your materials from?
I get my materials from my sheep. I have about 45 sheep. My husband and I, we have Navajo churro, and they come in an array of colors, of beautiful brown, tan, gray, and I use the plants around Navajo country and also away from Navajo country. I have plant dyes that come from Tucson, Arizona, the cochineal beetle bugs. And so I'm always experimenting with different plants.
How did you become a weaver? Is it something that you've always done, or is it a part of your culture that you reclaimed if you were an adult? Or?
Yeah, I was fortunate. My mother taught me how to weave when I was 7 years old. And she sat me down and told me, today you're going to learn how to weave. And throughout my life, I've been weaving, and she's been my teacher. And that's been over 25 years ago. So today, she still is my teacher. there's so much knowledge that she has and that she teaches me and continues to teach me. And I have a 4-year-old daughter, and her name is Winter Rose. So at 4 years old, she's learning how to weave on her own with her own interests.
What about you, Tony?
Well, I guess I started drum making when I started singing in the powwow drum around in Las Vegas a little while ago, a long time ago. And I always thought I was a good singer, but I don't think I'm a good singer. And people have told me in the past that I am a good singer, but I still don't believe I'm a good singer. But a drummer, I always liked to drum. Also, when Tanaba was talking, and she reminded me of my own grandmother too, because every time I went back there, she was always in front of the, just weaving all the time when we were back there, you know. And I remember, oh, back in the 60s, I think, and oh yeah, we got to get this done, they'll talk about, because they need a pickup truck, and they would weave a blanket, use it as a down payment back then, and other things too as well. And so I want to thank you for those good memories of my grandmother. Good memories. I do make drums. I do here at the workshop here at Idle George, and also Oasis too as well. The hide is made out of elk, and the wood frame is made out of maple, heat treated. It's really hardened when it's heat treated that way. Mm-hmm. I get the materials out of fur and hide place out of Oregon. Get it on the website. I don't go out and chop the trees down or find it and go from scratch, because it's just too much time. And then, of course, we don't go out hunting for deer or elk or anything like that either. So we just get it all done and all the lacing. Yeah. We do it easier than Tanaba. Exactly. Click. Hit that little shopping cart. But for hers, I was listening to her, and I know exactly what they do and when they go out there and do it. And it's really more than what I do on my side, so... And of course, going back to as well, I watched my uncles, you know, they do all the silversmithing, and seeing his table there and the torch and all that stuff too there. So we went back as kids and as adults too as well. But the drum to me is, to the Native American people, it's known as the heartbeat of Mother Earth. And I know it's the first thing we hear too, a heartbeat as a child or as a baby growing up inside our mother's womb, as our own heartbeat and then our mother's heartbeat. And we never lose that connection of a heartbeat. It's, or a drum beat is the same. It's not like a flute or a guitar or a piano, which are all great instruments. But the drum beat, which is the heartbeat, it's very special to me. And we always have that connection with our own mothers, no matter what problems we have, or if we move thousands of miles away. And sometimes we need our mothers all the time. And of course... it's always there, our heartbeat. We just have to put our hand to our chest and feel that heartbeat, and that connection is always there with our mothers and our grandmothers and so forth, because Navajo way is we always born for our mother's side and our clan side, so, which is good, and I like that. Oh.
So I'm going to ask you, too, because you grew up in Los Angeles.
No, I did.
Correct. You did?
Mm-hmm, yes.
So did you always make drums? Were you always involved with drumming? Or is that something you started doing, the powwows and those things?
Oh, that's when I started doing the powwows as I got older, yes. But I was raised a Catholic because during the time on the reservation, back, I guess, when they had the assimilation program and the government was there, one of the things they put out there, of course, is the religion groups, you know, the Presbyterians, the Methodists, and the Mormons. And in fact, my cousin's a Mormon priest or deacon, I don't know what they call themselves, but, and of course the Catholics were there too. So one of the things the government does is, you know, sort of break down the culture so they can make Indians or wild Indians into civilized Americans. So I was raised Catholic. I went through being an altar boy and confirmation, and went to Catholic high school and, of course, elementary school. But, of course, you know, we didn't have a choice to be our own religion. So, of course, at the same time, I was learning these other things, too, as well. I also learned that the Navajo do have their own spirituality, or Native Americans have their own spirituality, which is in a sense, you know, not a religion like Western mm-hmm. ideas or thoughts of religions are. So I gradually leaned to that and learned more about it and went that route. I'm not saying that being a Catholic is a bad thing, and of course not. It's all good. Mm-hmm. All religion is good because it have all good things in them. Mm-hmm. It's just how sometimes man interprets it and puts it in their own way. But with my own spirituality, what I do is just what I've learned for myself, my own path. And of course, one of the things, of course, being a, I guess you call it an ex-Catholic, is I learned good things being a Catholic too as well, and I apply that to my own spirituality.
Oh. And the drumming is connected with the spirituality.
Oh, yes, it is. Definitely, mm-hmm. yes.
So, Jody, your children are Navajo. How do you, and they live here in Indiana, so how do you keep them connected with Navajo culture?
Well, I spent a lot of time out there, and I had some mm-hmm. really good families that mm-hmm. sort of just took me in. One family in Pinon, in particular, before I had children, mm-hmm. They embraced me like one of their own. I mean, she taught me how to weave, but I don't know how to do it. I mean, I can sit there and do it, but I'm like, oh, I missed one again. I have to take it out and put it back. and she taught me how to make bread. They took me to different ceremonies. They taught me how to pick out things for ceremonies. It was probably among the best experiences of my life. And then my ex, his family is less traditional, but mm-hmm. yet, I mean, even if you don't practice the traditions, they're still Navajo. They live in Cottonwood, Arizona, and they don't even have running water yet. But they're working on it. They put the bathroom in, and they're just waiting for the pipes. So when the girls go there this summer, they hopefully they'll have running water. But they go out there during the summer, and I'm involved with the American Indian Center, but mm-hmm. most of my friends here are Navajo. There are a lot of Navajos that, you know, have come out here, and my ex's cousin sister lives here with her family, and cousin, it's like you'd say sister, but in English, in modern culture, it'd be your cousin, but mm-hmm. when, like, Navajos translate that to English, it's cousin sister, cousin brother, that kind of thing, and your uncles are your Che and your Nolly. So when the girls go see their paternal grandmother, they're going to see their Nolly. And she's come here, and she's taught me jewelry, and, you know, I'm not good at it, but she is. But that's how I keep them connected. And actually, one of my other colleagues, Regina, she's Sioux and Navajo, mm-hmm. and we were talking about the language and needing to learn it more, because she knows a little more than I do, mm-hmm. but I know enough just to say, like, ha, go. But that's about, you know, that's about it. So, I mean, I'm hoping, and then we also talked about possibly, you know, returning to Arizona to be closer to the reservation so that they don't lose their language. But, you know, I don't know if that's in the immediate future or not.
You know, a lot of people probably wouldn't know that there's a thriving Navajo community in Indiana. Working at the American Indian Center, do you know how many Navajo?
The thing about Navajo people, a lot of Indian mm-hmm. people, from my observation, you guys tell me if you agree or not, but they're not, you know, like, if you go to Los Angeles or New York, you'll see the Italian community, mm-hmm. and you see the Asian community, mm-hmm. and but Navajos, they just kind of go, and they get a job, and then they mm-hmm. get a place to stay, and they don't locate themselves based on where, I mean, mm-hmm. they do per family. So mm-hmm. I know of a family from Chinle mm-hmm. that's up north, mm-hmm. and then I know of another family, I forget where they said they're from, maybe the Four Corners area. Mm-hmm. They live up north, but those mm-hmm. families don't necessarily, they kind of know of each other, but they don't mm-hmm. necessarily, you know, they don't get together and mm-hmm. and have dinners and stuff. And then mm-hmm. there's another group down on south of here, where mm-hmm. actually we're going to go take you for dinner. but they're from Shanto. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of mm-hmm. people here when we connect, you know, when our lives permit, but it's not the same as...
I think I understand what you're saying. We don't migrate in one neighborhood, all of us. When we when Navajo families come together, like in a live in a metropolitan setting, I don't know. We are very strong, and I think that when we know of another Navajo, for me, when I was away from home, and I tried to look for a Native American, not necessarily Navajo, because you don't have much of a choice. You're lucky if you find a Navajo. So, I think it's maybe we don't migrate in one neighborhood because of our upbringing. You know, we're kind of, we can be shy, you know, conservative.
Thank you, everyone. And thank you for everyone that listened. Please, please remember to come out for Navajo Day. Again, Saturday, April 12th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And remember, Saturday is also a great time to see the museum's newest exhibits, Yosemite, Art of an American Icon, and Ansel Adams in Yosemite. This episode of EM Radio and others can be found at www.idlejorg.org under audio video. Or you can subscribe to our broadcast through iTunes. And by the way, if you're an iTunes subscriber, be sure to leave a comment and tell you what you think of EM Radio and share some topics you want us to cover in the future. Thank you, and talk to you next week.